Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Previously, .tv Podcast Network.
Number one son, right here.
Yeah, well, let's hope he doesn't forget us when he's lunching with governors and senators.
I think he already has.
Do I know you? You look kind of familiar to me.
Brother has every reason to be proud of himself. Yeah, anytime every group on campus agrees on something, it's an event.
Yeah, that's the part I don't get. You spit on the Greeks, you snub your nose at the progressives, and yet you still get picked.
Well, don't look for a rational explanation. The world just loves Brandon.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 18, Heartbreaker. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for that very exciting intro, Dave.
No response from Dave?
Glarkware for shirts, previously .tv/ads for ads.
Let's get into it. Our third record of a rare three episode day.
Yeah.
And this one's going to be a corker.
I think so too. So let's get started with the dumbest storyline. Cindy gets a storyline. Cindy has enrolled at CU in the MA program for family counseling. I don't know what that means. Is it social work? Is it psychology? Never explained. Brenda is, surprise, a bitch about it in clip number two.
Mom and Dad went to the movies, but they won't be back late because it's a school night for Cindy.
So she's getting on your nerves already, huh?
Brandon, how could she not? I mean, everywhere I go, there she is.
Oh, come on. It's a big campus. She wants to go to school. What else can she do?
I hear they have great correspondence courses.
Hey, you watch it. You're talking about my mother now.
I don't know why Brandon's acting like he cares about Cindy ever, because he doesn't.
Yeah.
But also, Brenda, it's a college campus. You're not in the same classes. What is your problem?
Yeah, I don't. Who cares?
Indeed. It's not like she's asking her to have lunch. Anyway, Brenda is completely transparent in her horror that Cindy is going to be taking classes near hers, and rather than get a ride with Cindy, goes to, I guess, wait outside for Donna to pick her up. Cindy can tell that Brenda's not thrilled about this because Brenda is not as good an actor as she thinks she is. Brenda later comes into the kitchen where Cindy is studying, and she has brought her a whole bag full of swag from the CU bookstore. There is a picture in the visual aids of one of the gifts that Brenda has bought for Cindy is an enormously large baseball cap, which Carol Potter like perches on top of her head. I assume so that she doesn't ruin her hair for like later takes, but it's looks so stupid. It's ridiculous. You can see in the visual aids. Then Brenda takes it and turns it around backwards.
And then she's like, now it's cool. Like, no.
Anyway,
no.
The end of this is that Brenda decides to quit being shitty. Moving on. To our C story, David quits drugs for 5 minutes. So Donna blahs about how much David is changing, and Kelly respects his confidence by not telling Donna about his, quote, past, unquote, meth use. But she only kind of keeps his confidence in clip number three.
If my date in Big Bear proved anything, it's how much I want David back. I think his feelings are a little confused. Yeah, but he did ask us if he could stay in the apartment. That must mean something, right? Maybe. But I think it's a little more complicated than you think. I guess he was ashamed to tell you, but David started seeing a psychiatrist.
It's not really Kelly's news to tell, I feel like, but whatever.
Also, who cares? Like, didn't we have this conversation like three seasons ago when someone was like, gasp, seeing a therapist, like, who cares?
Yeah, it was Brenda and sitting side by side in wing chairs with hers.
And even if, oh God, that's right. And even if she knew the central problem, mm-hmm. which allegedly is that he's, you know, the 1 week meth head.
Right.
Like, the actual problem is that he's been written to be a complete dick to her all season, and he wants to bone, and she's not going to do that for religious reasons. So, yeah. Like, you don't actually want him back.
No.
And if you do, you are wrong.
Yep. And she will be later, as we will find out. Spoiler alert. So then we cut over to David's appointment with his shrink. Hilariously, his shrink is Donna Pinciotti's dad from That 70s Show. You can see the visual aids. At this moment, David doesn't hate Donna Martin. He wants her back, but he seems to know it's a lost cause. Otherwise, he is lacking insight in clip number four.
So, what role do you think drugs played in all this?
Well, no role, really.
Yep. Case closed.
I mean, there weren't enough hours in the day, and a little speed gave me enough energy to function.
I thought you said you were taking sedatives.
Yeah, well, I guess I was taking whatever I could get my hands on. But it's not a problem anymore because I've stopped.
That's a big first step. Keeping it that way is going to require some hard work.
Why are there crickets in the background? Like, I've sort of never understood the soundtrack's reliance on crickets, although I have found it amusing when there's like a laugh line in some serious scene in the Walsh kitchen that I find amusing, and then there's crickets. Like, okay. But yeah. Why are there crickets at his psychiatrist's office?
I don't know. I also don't know why he thinks the answer to what role did drugs play is no role. I did them. They were a research tool for me getting through finals. And oh yeah, I did them so much I forgot all the different kinds of drugs I did. Like, seriously, David, are you that stupid? And anyway, of course he is.
And then why go to the psychiatrist if you're like, yeah, no, not relevant. Like,
right.
Well, you're gonna pay for the hours, so why don't you just spitball some shit?
Yeah, I'm not totally clear what issues he is working on with the psychiatrist, if not the drug use. But anyway, they're both idiots. Kelly and Donna joke around at a yoga video that Felice sent. When David comes in, they stop cracking up, and he tells them it's okay to laugh around him. And then Kelly leaves so that David can tell Donna about his drug use, ridiculously, in clip number five.
For the past few weeks, somehow I started doing crystal meth.
Somehow!
You know, speed.
Just fell into a
so
bottle
I could
of
stay orange juice. Away from my stupid radio show. Well, I guess it really screwed me up. And I just wanted to apologize for everything I've done. I know I've been a real jerk. Well, now you know.
Don't get too excited about how Donna's just sitting there letting him disclose all this to her without saying anything back and just letting him have the moment and not trying to tell him it's okay, because it's not going to last. Because when she asks if he's okay, he says he's clean, which seems like an overstatement, but whatever. She just wants him to get well. Great.
Also, he manages to still make the radio show sound like it's her fault and like he's angry at her. Like,
yeah.
What? Why are you on this show? Just go away. No one wants you. Beat it.
It's true. The next day, Donna checks in on how David is doing, and he says the test will be when he's on the air that night. She can't believe he's still planning to do his show and reminds him that his shrink advised him to stay away from triggering places. She offers to do the show for his protection, but David says it's only going to be for a couple of days. I don't know what that means. That's when Steve rolls up to offer to sub for David. Donna thinks it's a good idea. They make hilarious faces, which you can see in visual aids because I made a GIF. And David, for some reason, agrees because he's dumb. And also, the drug theme, is playing under this whole scene in case we didn't know this is about to be a disaster. On the air, Steve is terrible. His big idea is to call a 900 line, ask your grandparents. Donna comes in into David's room, amused by Steve's show and not, for instance, concerned that the idea she helped sell David on this could get him in trouble. David is in the middle of apologizing to Donna for the way he screwed up their relationship when the CD skips and Steve has locked himself out of the studio. It's all stuff. Also, Steve
stuff.
Interrupts them kissing, whatever. Kelly, the next day, checks in with David about his progress and mental health and whatever. He thinks that his not having boned Donna will make it easier for them to be friends and says that they had fun for the first time since Christmas, aka since he dumped her ass hard. Kelly? Clip number 6.
That's what she said.
Ha ha! An actual, that's what she said. That's not a that's what she said.
Just I know. Rare. It's like a unicorn.
Anyway, Kelly cautions David not to get too cocky about his recovery. Just in time, David goes to the radio station where some dude, Jackson, that we've never seen before, gives David the gears about his show the night before and the complaints about same. Also, there was never a scene where David talked to anybody else about having Steve, who's never done this before, sub for him. And would that be okay? And like, there's no question of permission. It just happens. So obviously this radio station is not such a tight ship that David, whatever. I don't know why I care. David asks him to cover his shift on like 2 hours notice, whatever the fuck. Ask your shrink about planning ahead, David. But then Jackson agrees and sends David to get something out of Howard's desk, where, of course, David finds a sachet of meth. And sometime later, David is still at the station when Donna calls. She's just had to call around to try and find him because it was the past. And he acts all chipper as he lies that he couldn't find someone to cover, but that he'll be fine. But when he hangs up, we see the telltale OJ and he takes a big swig. There's a gif. And when we hear him on the show, the OJ is coursing through him in clip number 7.
So with 1 hour left in the show, I'm feeling tingly all over. Why? Because I made a charged particle traveling at the speed of light.
That pauses him licking the paper.
Here I am trying to keep trillions of particles moving at 186,000 miles per second, because if they slow down for a millisecond, I'm dead. And my shrink wonders why I'm on edge. Wake up and smell the mochaccino, man!
I mean, wow. Like, I feel like if people would love to hear the... Everyone who does drugs should have to be recorded so they can hear themselves later and be like, oh God, I can't do that again. I sound like an asshole.
Oh God. I mean, I guess it's not that far off, but I'd just like to know what direction, if any, Brian Austin Green received for that sequence, because it's really, it's big. It is big.
It's real big.
Not as big as Andrea.
No, that's an excellent segue, Sarah, to our B plot. Andrea's knocked up. So Andrea, her giant coat and her camouflaging newspaper, which you can see in the visual aids, nervously approach Kelly in the student union to tell her that she is pregnant. And when Kelly gets over her initial surprise, they have this conversation, clip number 8.
What are you going to do? I just started college. I don't feel like I have a lot of choice. Kelly, have you ever had to get an abortion? No, I haven't. I don't mean to sound rude, but do you know who the father is?
Well, that is rude.
I know exactly when it happened. One time without protection. What does Jesse say about it? That's another problem. I don't know if I should tell him or not. Kelly, he comes from this huge Catholic family. I'm sure he's not exactly pro-choice.
Are there any other kind?
Maybe it's not as bad as you think. I mean, he wasn't too religious to sleep with you, right?
I mean, that's a good point.
However, it turns out, you know that you can count on me for support or money or whatever. But Andre, don't you think he deserves to know what's going on?
Ah, fuck him, honestly. I
mean, well, yeah. Yeah, basically.
One of our listeners, Tara Rose, has a blog where she reviews abortion episodes of TV shows, which is incredibly important because they're almost always terrible. And we will link to it in the show notes, even though it's about this episode and the next one. But she points out one of the many things that this episode screws up is Kelly supposedly being Andrea's friend, but then trying to not just listen to her and like, don't you think he should? Like, whatever she wants to do is probably the right decision. It's not like she hasn't been spending this whole time thinking about what is the right decision, because it's all that's on her mind, obviously. So Kelly, how about just focus on the whatever you decide, I'm here for you, rather than trying to boss her around in terms of how she should proceed.
Seriously.
Moving on, Jesse waits for Andrea and her terrible outfit, including a crooked choker, the worst kind, in the middle of the quad at CU. And he's like, I guess this is it, because he assumes that she has brought him there to dump him. And when she says she didn't, he for some reason is relieved. But he suggests that they talk over lunch, which is an overly fussy picnic no straight 20-something man would ever assemble, by the way.
Also,
yes.
You prepped a picnic assuming that she wanted to dump you?
Yeah, I don't know.
And then he isn't even a little, well, we'll see this in the clip, but this is the most maddening TV convention ever.
Mm-hmm.
She calls a meeting. He assumes he's getting dumped. When that's not it, he's incurious about what she actually wanted to talk about. And then we'll get to the other part of that after the clip, but yeah.
Yep. They sit on the blanket and they like paw at each other. Sarah made a gorgeous gif because they have no chemistry and it's super awkward.
It is so awkward. It's like two eggs trying to fuck. No.
So he's celebrating because he just got a clerkship with the federal court in San Francisco, and they discuss that in clip number 9.
My mother's convinced I'm going to be the first Latino Supreme Court justice.
Well, you have my vote.
Not how it works.
All right, sit. So, congratulations. You are hitched to a future power player.
Hitched?
Okay, hitched is probably the wrong word. But I think you should spend next summer with me up in San Francisco. Say you will.
Jesse.
Say you will.
A couple of things. First of all, I forgot to say that her celebration face when he tells her the news of his appointment is like her Vegas slot machine face times 1,000. So you can see that in the middle aids. Also, everything that is wrong with privilege is encapsulated in his congratulating her for dating him because of his great news. Like, fuck you.
And also, since when do you have to pressure somebody to say yes to uprooting themselves for the summer for you and then not be a little weirded out when they're clearly not into it the first time you asked? Like,
yeah,
let it go, dick.
Yeah. But then
say you will. No.
Right. They've been dating for like barely. I mean, it's February and it was like since Thanksgiving. So I think this is a little bit forward of him to even like ask and act like it's not a big deal. But anyway, worse on top of worse. Then they do the TV thing where he asks what she wanted to talk about. And she's like, clip number 10.
Nothing.
Okay. He has no follow-up questions.
Endless pause. Classic Andrea, like, melting Eeyore face, and then nothing.
And then he's like, great, like, ugh, fuck both these people anyway.
Have some French bread, okay? Deserve each other.
Anyway, Andrea then finds Kelly at school. Kelly's wearing a dumb baby tee, by the way, that I hate, with a ruffle around the rib cage, but I do appreciate that she's re-wearing something that we've seen before on principle. She asks how Andrea's talk with Jesse went, and Andrea says it didn't come up. Kelly says it never will come up if Andrea doesn't mention it. So by way of defense, Andrea tells Kelly about Jesse's clerkship in clip 11.
So that's that? You're going in alone? I'm going to make an appointment for next week. When you were volunteering at Rapline back in high school, didn't you ever have any pregnant girls call up and ask you how to break it to their boyfriends?
Yeah.
And what did you tell them?
To be honest,
shouldn't you take your own advice?
I don't know.
Shouldn't you listen to this adult woman about what she's decided? I mean, whatever.
Yeah, and, you know, like, based on what I observed secondhand in, you know, a close to identical couple of situations in college, Andre's instincts are right.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to go for this, some of these Catholic guys, and that's eventually going to be that. Like,
yeah.
I don't, not all, and she should do what she feels. And yes, it's probably better to be honest and whatever, but it's not for Kelly to say.
Right.
So I don't know.
Right. It's Andrea's decision. And she, as we find out later, has some good reason, especially more so in the next episode, that she was like maybe right when she thought she shouldn't tell him, but whatever. Spoiler alert. Anyway, Brandon stops by her room to blah at her about his obligations, which we'll get to, barfily, and how he knows that she would find a way to do all the stuff that she needed to if she were in his position. And when she doesn't answer, he asks what the problem is, and she tells him that she's not able to do anything because she's pregnant. Clip number 12.
Last year, this time, I was on my way to Yale, and now I'm getting ready for an abortion.
The two are not mutually exclusive. Like, you can to Yale and terminate a pregnancy. It doesn't mean you're a bad or dumb person. Ugh. The show. Anyway.
I mean, it kind of does mean she's dumb because she thought it was colitis. Like,
yes, that's a separate issue.
I realize you're 87 years old, but it's not fucking colitis. Ever watch TV before? You're on a nighttime soap. It's not fucking colitis.
I think I pulled that out of the air. I can't even remember if that's one of the things she thought it was, but whatever. Brandon.
No, it is.
Of course. Can't believe that she still hasn't told Jesse because it's Brandon. And Gabrielle Carteris, I'm sorry to say, is not a pretty crier as she says why she can't in clip 13.
I'm afraid of losing him. I mean, he's an amazing guy, Brandon. He's funny. He's smart. He got his whole future ahead of him, and I don't want to ruin that. I love him.
Does he love you?
Yeah.
What do you do? Well, a priceless antique.
He's not gonna leave you. I mean, if I was Jesse, I'd want to be the one sitting here right now.
Sorry, I had to leave it
in.
She actually sounds like she's crying for real, so props for that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, that snuffly hiccupy, that was good.
Yeah.
Less good.
Yeah.
If I don't understand why they always have these chignons for day on the show, but get all the hair in it or don't do it.
Yes.
And what the heck, like, from the side she looks like Predator is problem one of about 78, but then there are all these like wisps of hair that don't go anywhere.
No, they just, it's like they're just stuck there.
It's like this Escher painting of Predator. Nana Escher Predator. I don't fortunately, quote unquote, for everyone, I screen grabbed it from every possible angle,
really,
including
did.
Space. I still can't figure it out.
Nope.
Help us. They're in the visual aids.
Yeah. Getting back to Brandon's bullshit. Not wanting to tell your boyfriend you're pregnant because you think he's going to dump you is probably a good sign. You should not be dating him because then he's a bad person. But in addition to that, it's not for Brandon to, it's especially not for Brandon to say who she should and should not disclose this to. And, you know.
And if he says anything, perhaps he ought to point out that the way Andrea has phrased all of this is, I don't want to ruin Jesse's future for him.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Uh-huh. Like, if he's such a great guy, then he'll figure it. I mean, like, there's no point of trying to unravel this. Like, all of this was obviously, this whole storyline was hastily assembled because she was pregnant for real, and therefore there are a lot of reasons why it doesn't work, but this is one of the more egregious parts of it. Like,
well, and you know, it's a clerkship for the summer in San Francisco. He is not on the mission to Mars. Settle down.
Anyway, God, moving on. Andrea has a piece of paper in her hand as she creeps up to Jesse's door. He's on the phone with his old Yale roommate, and he's oblivious on his call, but finally notices that Andrea is still standing in the doorway looking stricken, and they have this exchange, clip 14.
Andrea?
This is hard enough, okay, so just let me say it. I'm pregnant.
Cricket, 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 cricket.
I wrote on this piece of paper in case I lost my nerve to tell you again.
Okay. One thing they got right about the scene is that I like how he's trying to approach her being nice, and she's like, she's so keyed up that she has to be like, no, don't be nice to me right now. That felt very true. Because we've all been in that experience where you're like, you can't be nice to me or I'm going to lose it. So I appreciated that. However, the note that she's written is on this like flower bordered notepad that I'm pretty sure I had at the time. And she's like, her handwriting is so, it's not the same handwriting, by the way, either from when she was reviewing the Peach Pit earlier in the season where she had like stuff highlighted that should not have been. But also she has the P and the T of pregnant capitalized in the middle of the sentence. It's like there's obviously a pic of it, the note in the visual aids, but it makes her look insane and possibly touched.
Yeah. Also, and this is just me, but there are a couple of actresses who do this on this show, and it drives me crazy. Pregnant.
Yeah.
Pregnant. Mm-hmm. Nant. Mm-hmm. Not pregnant.
Yeah.
You are pregnant. Mm-hmm. You are playing a character who is pregnant. Work with a coach. I know not everybody is like, it might not be that easy to enunciate.
Yeah.
Get another take. It drives me fucking crazy. Ugh.
Agree. So then they have the rest of the conversation where he's, you know, he's supportive or whatever. And then he also, unfortunately, puts his hands on her cheeks and he like stretches out her face sideways with his thumbs, which you can see in the visual aids because I made a GIF. Anyway, the end of the story for now is they love each other. Great. Moving on to our
guess
A's.
What I don't love.
I know. This. Our A story. Peach Pit in peril again. Brandon a bitch forever. time to deal with the storyline that will make you dream of the days Brandon only had a gambling problem. Clip 15.
So, tell me, Brandon, how does it feel to be chosen the California University representative for the National Task Force on Higher Education?
Well, I'm very honored and surprised and happy.
Good. So, do you have any concerns, any questions?
Yeah. Do I really get to meet the president?
Meet and advise. At the end of the semester, when the task force presents its findings at the White House.
That's great. I don't know how to thank you.
Listen, just do a good job, son.
He won't. Also, spoiler alert, I'm mad that we are not going to get a scene of Brandon braying his recommendations about education to the president.
It would have been really awesome if they could have like Forrest Gumped him into some footage.
Well, they do for the handshaking scene, but like that's all there is, so we don't get any of like, listen, Bill. Fuck you. Anyway, moving on. Dylan has moved
on. President Clinton. First.
The terrible part is how easy it is to imagine. Anyway, Dylan has moved on from begging food from Nat to begging jobs, specifically a waitress job for Suzanne. She's very respectful when Dylan brings her in with her CV, not that he really needed to. Clip 16.
You have good references.
Of course.
What? The fuck does that mean?
I assume his reference is Dylan. And maybe like Kelly, who can be like, oh yeah, she sat nearby while we were playing with a Casio. I have no idea.
I get like, what does that even mean? Even if they weren't from diners in like Davenport, Iowa, who puts a reference on their waitress resume? So fucking idiotic. Anyway, whatever. Let's get to the almost dying.
Okay.
It's hilarious.
Of course, he hires her on the spot, and Brandon narrates while Nat gives her his standard corny tour of the diner, which takes a turn when Nat keels over having a heart attack, which is beautifully documented by my wife, Sarah, in both GIF and PIC form.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're not.
Cardiac disease is... cardiac disease is no joke.
No.
Joe E. Tata thinking that he's in a silent movie that's, I don't even know.
It's a lot. And I also feel for the teenagers who then have to see Nat's hairy nipple while Dylan and Brandon give him CPR, and also myself, because I'm very immature. That's in the visual aids, too. You're welcome. Nat ends up at a VA hospital, so good luck, dude, while Brandon waits in the
Brandon
hall.
Brandon has to blow sunshine up the VA's ass, though. Did you notice that?
Yep.
It was sort of like the Vegas Tourism Bureau line. Like, it's a great thing he has his benefits. Mm-hmm. I'm like...
That's all I keep reading about in the news, how great veterans' benefits are. Anyway, Brandon is standing in the hallway in his gigantic suit pants when Nat's cousin Joey comes around the corner with hopeful news from the doctor in clip 17.
Nat's got to be in the cardiac care unit for a few days at least. And then he's got to get strong enough for bypass surgery. Poor little Butch.
Poor little Butch, title of this episode. Anyway, Nat got special dispensation for Brandon to go back and see him, and we see why Brandon got this treatment when he comes back and jokes that Nat did this to get attention. Shut up, Brandon. The next day, Joey is at the Peach Pit trying to handle business stuff, including canceling deliveries. And when he is hung up the phone, Brandon says that he could tell the suppliers what Nat's in the hospital for, but Joey doesn't want him running up tabs while he's laid up. They have this exchange in clip 18.
Hey, Brandon. Thanks, huh? I mean, if it wasn't for you, I would never have found anything around here.
Yeah, well, I pretty much ran this place for Nat this summer. I know my way around.
Yeah, he's lucky to have a friend like you.
Oh, come on.
I know. So unacceptable.
Why don't you just get on your knees and stuff all of Brandon in your mouth?
Yes. And to this, Brandon just nods like, yes, he is lucky to have a friend like me. He's the worst. Brandon then brings Dylan to see Nat in the hospital and bring him a big stupid card of a burger. Nat wants info in the restaurant. When Brandon says that Joey's handling, Nat is horrified. In clip 19.
He didn't open up in time for breakfast, did he?
Things were a little hectic.
What time did he finally open? Lunch, right?
Nah, don't worry about that now, okay? Come on, just worry about getting well.
In all the years, Peach Pit's never been closed. People count on it. It's part of their lives.
All right. It's a fucking dime.
Well, of course they do, because you're just giving shit away.
Yeah.
I'm sure people are very disappointed that they can't just have diner food for free anymore.
Yeah, it's a...
More silent movie acting, like, we get it, Joe. You're excited that you're getting something to do now that the gang is not all in one place usually anymore, but ease up.
Yeah, it's a diner in Los Angeles. Like, there are other diners. Even if the diner in our tiny little town closed because the owner was having cardiac surgery, people would figure out how to make their own spaghetti for a couple of days. But anyway.
Or, I don't know, drive to another town?
Yeah.
Like, what is this, a Potemkin village, like, 20 miles outside Vladivostok? Like, there's no other diner here. Whatever.
My point, it's Los Angeles. Anyway, Dylan and Brandon tell Nat to focus on his health, but that doesn't really work. And later, Brandon goes home and tells Brenda he thinks the Peach Pit is the only thing that Nat has to live for, basically, which is bad news. Clip 20.
What?
I can't believe Joey didn't tell him.
Tell him what? Brenda, tell him what?
Easy, Dad.
Brandon, you did not hear this from me. Dad and Joey had a big meeting today. Did you know Nat's cousin Joey owns 50% of the Peach Pit?
No.
Well, he and Dad were saying that the only realistic option is to convince Nat to sell it.
Sell the Peach Pit? They want to sell the Peach Pit?
This music.
They can't do that. That'll kill him.
That's what they're planning on doing.
The music is way more alarmed about this than I am. Obviously, this Joey owning half the business thing is a new development, because I don't seem to recall that ever coming up when the mall was going to be built around it or anything.
Yeah, and that's easy enough to retcon. What is, like, baffling to me is that this is the storyline. Like, obviously, it's like, well, Brandon can save the Peach Pit and come into conflict with Jim again. And then they, like, retro-engineered the storyline from there. And we're like, well, let's try to get Joey Tata some Emmy love or something.
Yeah.
But it's like, why... Like, can't you do it in some way that's not so evidently stupid? Like, it's been 2 days.
Yeah.
It's not a pop-up. Like...
Well, and also, like, the whole business, like, who opened it? Like, are we supposed to think that Nat opens the Peach Pit himself every day? Like, he doesn't have anyone else who could have done it when he was in the hospital? Like, I just don't believe he works 7 days a week at 6 a.m. or before, since that's when it opens. But, God, anyway, stupid. Yeah. So then Brandon, the next day, enters the Walsh kitchen in his gigantic suit to show why he was the right student to join the task force in clip 21.
They asked me to sit in on a luncheon with some Nobel laureate. He has some ideas about improving science education or something.
Fuck off! No one made you do this if it's so boring. Say no! God!
Well, I think he would be more into it, but the fact is he's waiting for an opening to... read Jim's beads, because instead of just being like, so Dad, I heard this, what's going on?
Right. Well, so Brandon, we find out, hasn't talked to Jim about the Peach Pit because Brenda told him not to, but when she leaves, Brandon uses the limitations of Cindy's new school schedule as an opening to be smug and disingenuous and the worst in clip 22.
And I wouldn't worry about us getting our own breakfast either. I think we'll manage. Nat won't be in the hospital forever, and no, we always have the Peach Pit.
Listen, I think you should know. Nat's cousin Joey came to see me. He's convinced the best thing to do is to sell the Peach Pit.
What? He couldn't be more wrong, Dad.
After looking at the books, I'm afraid I'm inclined to agree.
So you're saying it's okay for Joey to stab Nat in the back?
You're not really listening.
I'm not really listening to you, Dad, because I'm not really liking what I'm hearing.
Joey's not the bad guy here.
Dick.
He happens to be an equal partner with Nat. With no money coming in, Peach Pit's going to be out of business in a matter of weeks. Joey just wants to make sure that Nat has something left when he gets out.
Sure, by selling off the one thing that means anything to him.
What Nat really needs to concentrate on is getting well.
I'm sure all anyone wants is what's best for Nat.
Well, then why doesn't somebody ask him?
At this point, you don't know that they have it, you dick. God. I mean, they haven't. Ugh. But that's not the point. Like, this whole thing where Brandon thinks he's Nat's dad as well as Brenda's is gross.
And the whole, I'm not really listening because I'm not really liking what I'm hearing, is like, that should
the Brandon
be on
Walsh
your tombstone.
Story.
Seriously, that's literally what is in my notes. The Brandon story.
Ugh. So Brandon comes to visit Nat, who's looking pinker but distressed as he tells Brandon about the imminent Peach Pit sale. Nat thinks Joey is right about selling. Brandon, who knows nothing about anything, that asserts that Joey is not right. Nat says his doctor told him stress is a risk factor for heart problems. Dahoy. Guess who's got an answer for that? Clip 23.
So you'll change your lifestyle a little bit. You'll start exercising. You'll take a few aspirin. You change your diet. How about a low cholesterol menu at the Peach Pit, huh?
That's not a bad idea. Not that we're ever going to do it.
I mean, it kind of sounds like Nat is ready to retire. Why are we acting like this is a bad thing, Brandon?
Yeah, maybe he's sick of you and all your friends freeloading off of him and, like, moping around annoying the other customers.
Breaking up in his restaurant, Steven
playing
Celeste.
The same song over and over again before going off to work Shadowcaster, for example.
God. Anyway, Nat tells Brandon not to worry about the Peach Pit. Brandon decides to let Nat reassure him for now and then calls him Butch and then winks at him. Not appropriate to do to anyone, least of all your elders. Brandon, leap into an active volcano and end it for all of us. You're the worst. Anyway, speaking of the worst, he then goes to tell Andrea about it, or at least his version of it, in clip 24.
Nat wants to sell a Peach Pit?
No, Nat doesn't want to sell the Peach Pit. Nat's sick and he's scared and he knows that without somebody to run the place, it's not really much good in holding on to it.
Yeah, so what's the problem? Like, ugh, anyway. The worst is yet to come. At home, Brandon and Jim yell at each other about the peach pit in clip 25.
Okay. All right, Mr. Walsh. It's your dime. I've got nothing else to say.
So that's it? You're going to drop out of school? You're going to give up the task force so you can run the diner?
How many times do I have to tell you? I'm not dropping out. I can fit it all in.
You know, you can choose to do something incredibly stupid with your life, and I can't stop you. But I'm not going to let you walk around in a dream world. If it was a full-time job for Nat, it's going to be a full-time job for you.
I'm not going to let Nat down. It's that simple.
What is it about the peach pit that always leads to these kind of arguments?
Want to know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. Nat is the only person I know that has never disappointed me.
Good Lord.
That's not fair.
Yeah, well, that's the way I feel. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got to get up early tomorrow.
You get back here for a spanking.
What's with the mandolin at the end also? But also, conveniently, Brandon is forgetting how mad and shitty he was to Nat again the last time he was talking about selling the peach pit. So what?
Yeah. And can you even do this legally? Like, it's just like, he's like, well, it's just sitting empty, so I guess I'll just open it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Joey called all the suppliers. What? Are there eggs for you to scramble? What? What?
Does he still have keys? Did he, like, make a copy when he was gonna fuck Andrea in there? Like, what is... Eh. And Jim is right. If it was a full-time job for Nat, apparently 7 days a week, it will be a full-time job for Brandon, so he's doesn't know how time works, evidently. Anyway, maybe he's just gonna get some meth from David. But then Brandon has to get up so early that David's stupid show is still on, and Brenda also gets up and asks if there's anything she could do to help him. She supports his wish to help Nat. Brandon then goes to the peach pit to open up, even though it's before 6 a.m. in February. It's light out. I can tell you from experience, it's not the case. Brandon then gets up on a chair to pull his fucking stupid retired uniform shirt out of its fucking shadow box of honor. And then he hears the door and yells over his shoulder that the place isn't open yet. But of course, it's Steve and the rest of Brandon's non-pregnant friends who have come to help him run the peach pit, even though this is a dumb idea. End of
and
episode!
None of them has any experience except Lavoine. And he's also, like, takes a cunty tone, like, we're not open yet. Like, you know what?
He does. It's not even like that. It's more like, we're not open yet. Like,
oh,
okay.
Him and his country tone. Is what I heard.
Yes, he would
sure,
just want to tell
tone.
That customer.
This is a family show.
See you next Tuesday. Anyway, that's our episode. Let's close it up. Episode MVP. Jim, the only one who has any idea about how shit works in the real world.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
All right, least valuable player.
Is
fucking Brandon and his braids of righteousness. It's a diner.
And you're 18. And it's none of your fucking business. Stay right out of it.
Like, the passion for this would maybe be less inappropriate if he was, like, concerned about keeping open, like, the one abortion clinic in a town in Kentucky or something. But it's a diner! Anyway, let's move on to the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. Five ways from this episode that Brandon might have ended up dead. contracted something at the VA hospital. drowned on dry land in his giant pants somehow.
Sure. Suffocated by his father's chest hair. Falls off the chair when he's getting his shirt down.
Punched to death by the Nobel laureate he has no respect for at the luncheon. And that makes five.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed, still in the politics chapter. Image. Shannon was the youth ambassador for the American Lung Association. Uh-oh. Reality. Shannon has smoked through a tobacco dynasty in a consumption of cigarettes that would frighten even the R.J. Reynolds family. Not only does she join her castmates in smoking on the non-smoking set of 90210, I doubt it was non-smoking, Shannon presents a particularly obnoxious menace to society, blowing smoke in the face of a correct blowing smoke in the face of correct smoking etiquette. At a publicity photo shoot with some of the other members in the cast, Shannon was smoking like a chimney, according to one Hollywood agent present at the time. One of the photographers asked Shannon if she could please put out her cigarette as it was starting to bother him, and she ignored him. So he asked her if she wouldn't mind stepping outside to finish smoking, and she replied, "Why don't you step outside?" The photographer told Shannon she needed a serious attitude change, to which she retorted, "Why? My attitude's the same as Tori's, and look where it's gotten her. Can't top that." End of excerpt.
Oh, man, that's great. Next time on Again With This, Dylan buys half the peach pit, David's drug problem buys him a shitload of trouble, and Aaron Spelling buys himself a free pass from the Parents Television Council by making Jesse adamantly pro-life. You'll be adamantly pro our death after you see the visual aids for that and all the other Again With This episodes. They're on our website, which is at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My exemplary co-host, Tara Ariano, is at Tara Ariano. And on Instagram, our peerless producer, David T. Cole, is at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi. You know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.